Well, after one spectacular failure, the $700 billion financial industry bailout found second life, of course, winning lopsided passage in the Senate and gaining ground in the House. A lot of this was done because the opposition appeared to be easing after the Senate added that $110 billion in tax breaks for businesses in the middle class, plus a provision to raise from $100,000 to $250,000 the cap on federal deposit insurance. Even though a tremendous percent of Americans aren't happy with this, they don't want this. In a moment, we'll be joined by two special guests. Catherine Austin Fitz will stay with us for the entire program. She'll be with us in a moment. And Bill Murphy, he first worked in the futures industry, and he'll be with us now. And I'll tell you a little bit more about him when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine Austin Fitz, founder and president of Solari. She served as managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street investment bank Dillon Reed & Company. She also served as assistant secretary of housing, federal housing at HUD in the first Bush administration, and was the president and founder of Hamilton Securities Group as well. Here she is back on Coast to Coast. You're becoming quite a regular, Catherine. How are you?
I'll tell you, George, these markets really keep you up at night.
I'm telling you. And Catherine, let me ask you before I introduce Bill. You've been opposed to the original bailout, as I have.
Yes.
Now that they seem to be changing it a little bit, have you changed it?
No, I am still opposed to it. I'm still very opposed to it.
Bill Murphy. Bill has first worked in the futures industry as a commodities broker. He worked for Shearson Hayden Stone and Drexel Burnham Lambert before starting up his own brokerage in New York in 1998. He opened up a financial market website geared to the gold market. In 1999, Bill became chairman of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA, to expose the manipulation of the gold price by the gold cartel. He chaired the GATA African Gold Summit in South Africa in 2001, and in 2005 chaired Gold Rush 21 in Canada. That was a historic conference held in the Yukon to expose the manipulation of the gold market. Here's Bill Murphy. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Great to be here, George.
Good. Likewise, it's going to be a fascinating hour. Catherine, you'll be with us for the entire program tonight.
Yeah.
Now, Bill, you know, we have talked about gold on this program for a long, long time. To me, it feels as if somebody's got a big thumb on it. It feels undervalued. What's your gut tell you?
That's what I've been doing for 10 years. They've had that big thumb on it for all this time. They're just gradually losing their war. But a gold cartel consisting of the U.S. government and billion banks like J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs have been sitting all over gold for some time, and for reasons we can get into, but especially noticeable of late because there's the shortages all over the world of gold and silver, and yet the prices never go up. And lately, this past week at 900, every time it goes through it, the government takes the price down, and they attack the market. And when the COMEX is closed, and that's the regular market, when lightly traded market like they did today and yesterday, and take it down 10 or 15 bucks, and no one's there, and nobody maximizing. Try to make the most money possible from a sale forces the price down unnecessarily, unless you're doing it for a different reason.
Okay, Catherine, here we go. The Senate passing this modified version of the $700 billion bailout, adding some provisions, about $100 billion for the middle class, for businesses, and, of course, upping the FDIC insurability of your accounts in a bank from $100,000 to $250,000. Face of that, is that any good?
There's some tinkering in that that's useful, George. The problem is that what we're doing, you know, what we've been doing for 10 years and what the manipulation of the gold price was so instrumental in allowing to happen is we've been draining value out of the real economy and using it to pump up financial fraud, financial speculation, and what I call the bubble economy. And the solution is to start taking resources out of the bubble and reinvesting them back in the real. And, of course, this bill isn't doing that. It's doing the opposite. It's taking more assets out of the real economy and investing them to prop up the bubble. So this is going, the money's going the wrong way. It's going from Main Street to Wall Street, and that's what needs to be reversed.
Bill and Catherine, feel free to jump in at any time because this is our roundtable discussion tonight. Bill, do you believe these folks? You know, you've got some experience. We're at Drexel Burnham. And of course, we know what happened to that firm because of, you know, the junk bond situation. And that thing went down. Do you think these folks are trying to help their friends?
Well, no question about it. I think there's some talk lately that Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson had something like $700 million worth of stock options himself at risk here. And there are definitely some things what they're saying about the systemic risk, but they created it. As Catherine said, a lot of it was started because they suppressed the gold price and they thwarted the free market process in the United States in many areas, and now it's coming apart. And yes, it's to bail themselves out. They're in the deepest of trouble. What no one's saying here is, you know, you go to $250,000 worth of deposits insured and all the rest of it. What's the quid pro quo for all this? Why not just they gave out $600 before? Why not give everybody $10,000 and guarantee things for, you know, for $500,000? And when does it end? And what's going to happen if things start to blow up here? And where's the money going to come from?
They just print it, Bill, right?
Well, yes. And, of course, that brings us back to gold, and which is why they suppress it, because gold's looked on as a barometer of U.S. financial market health. And so they're shooting the messenger here. They're, in other words, geez, folks, this isn't that bad. It's not that inflationary. So where the gold price would be going up?
George, one of the things that's very little understood, and I should just say as a matter of disclosure, I'm a board member of GATA, so I'm a follower and a major fan and supporter of Bill and everything he's doing. The mortgage bubble could never have happened without the suppression of the gold price, because the gold price is the smoke alarm. It's the burglar alarm. It tells everyone around the world, average people, ordinary people all over the world, that something's terribly wrong. And I remember in the late 90s and early 2000, 2001, when I tried to warn people about what was happening, and many people would say to me, not financial people, would say, well, you know, nothing can be wrong because look how low the gold price is. And so it's very important to understand that the mortgage bubble and this speculative debt bubble was engineered on a foundation of the suppression of the gold price.
Bill, what do you think gold should be selling at right now?
Oh, well, if it kept pace with inflation, it would be above 2,000, and I think it's going to 3,000 to 5,000. I said that at our Gold Rush 21 summit in the Yukon 3 years ago, and it's even at $100 oil, the historic price relationship is 15 to 1, which would put gold at $1,500 today.
I'm told that in India and in China, they're buying up gold like crazy. There could be even shortages. Is that true?
Yeah, demand in India in general is fantastic, and in Dubai, Turkey, demand among investors, very wealthy investors now around the world because of the crisis is just going off the charts, and yet the price can't do anything.
Now, how does a group manipulate the gold market? How does that happen?
Well, it's pretty simple, actually. They take gold. A bullion bank like Goldman Sachs would take gold from a central bank and borrow it at very low interest rates, say 1%, and they would take the gold and sell it in the marketplace, and that adds supply to the market and suppresses the price. And then, in addition, around that, because they need some physical supply, they use derivatives, which is, you know, futures and option contracts and various things on the over-the-counter market, the COMEX and so on, and play with the market and play with the speculators whenever they feel like it, like they've done, as I mentioned earlier, the past couple of days. And that gold supply gold demands something like 1,200 or 1,300 tons more than supply, so minus scrap supply. So that's they need that central bank supply, which they're doing surreptitiously. They're not declaring it. It's gold they're lending out that they can never get back, and that's how they do it.
Bill, is there any chance that the bailout package is in part to finance out their derivative positions?
Probably above my pay grade there, Catherine. But, yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that they're keeping the gold price down now before they get this extra money and so on, because they're petrified of what could happen should the gold price just explode. And it's a very fragile situation. So I think it's all intertwined somehow, yes.
Hey, Catherine.
George, what I think, you know, a lot of times I'll refer to this as financial coup d'etat.
Yes.
But I think what we're doing with this bailout package is paying to finance the tools that have been used as tools of economic warfare against us, including my bet is that they are financing out some of the gold derivative position.
That could be. Now, we also know that there's manipulation involved, there's fraud involved, trying to help their buddies. Why does the Senate vote for this? Why do our two major presidential candidates endorse some kind of bailout? Why don't they simply have the guts to stand up and say, we're not going to bail out your buddies who cheated, who were greedy? The American people know this. Well over 90% of the people you talk to are opposed to this. Why don't our elected officials simply stand up and say no?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at the members of the House who said no, by and large, they're people who have to go home and live. They have to live with their constituents, and that's their community, and that's their world. They're congressmen. They come from a smaller area. I think the senators are much more divorced from their constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a combination of reasons. Some of it is, you know, we've been centralizing the economy for quite some time, and many of the people in the Senate are very much of that, what I would call the pro-centralization world. They live and breathe the elite. They can't imagine anything else. But the last thing, to be perfectly blunt, is I think at this point you're looking at a very dangerous fight. And anyone who tries to buck the system is going to run into tremendous pressure and even violence if they don't go along.
Is it almost like in the early days of the Iraq War when some people did not believe in the weapons of mass destruction line, that they were accused of being unpatriotic? Is it that kind of force that's out there today, Catherine?
Oh, I think it's much more subtle and dirty. You know, I'll give you an example. There's a system called control files, and you don't get to a certain point in business or government unless you have a control file. And I remember when I was Assistant Secretary of Housing and I got ordered to do illegal things, you know, people would pull me aside and say, look, we haven't been able to find anything in your file, but we're going to find it, and you better play ball. You know, and it's scary tactics. So, you know, I think this is hardball. And most of the people who've risen and stayed in the Senate are people who've learned to go along with that system.
Yeah, I second what Gavin has to say. And we've been bucking this for 10 years. I mean, I've been to the Joint Economic Committee. We met with the Speaker of the House. We've had Senator Bunning, who's very much against this bill. He's a rarity in the Senate. Had him do some things in our behalf, and with letters and all this kind of stuff. And it goes into a black hole when you come to certain subjects like gold. It's like it's nuclear, and they're petrified because, as Catherine said earlier, the money and power and even the financial market press are very much intertwined. We had spent $264,000 on January 31st this year putting a full page color ad in the Wall Street Journal. I mean, and when we used the word what was coming, when people say that people didn't predict this, we did. We used the word in this ad, which people can go to www.gata.org.
G-A-T-A.org,
and they can see what we had to say. We used the word catastrophe. We used the word disaster. We didn't get one press inquiry of what we were talking about. Not one. It just
Not
blew me away.
One. Well, you know, by and large, the major media misses a lot of these stories. I mean, here, you know, we sit back on this program and try to give everyone a different perspective than just the news of the event, you know, with people like you, Catherine, to go behind those headlines to tell people what the heck is really going on. Let's talk a little bit about this buyout, Catherine, of these bad mortgages, which is the bulk of this money. Are they all in default?
It said that it's the majority, but we don't really know.
That's true.
In other words, what Paulson said is because remember, we've gone from a proposal that was 2.5 pages long to one that's now over 450 pages. But what Paulson said was he wanted the ability to buy any asset he wanted without any check or transparency, and he wanted to do it without any court review. Now, my guess is what that means is he wants to be able to clean up a variety of things, including the gold derivatives, including derivatives related to mortgages, and including the kind of fraudulent mortgages that we've talked about before on Coast to Coast, George, you know, including mortgage-backed securities where there's literally, you know, the same house has 10 mortgages kind of stuff. And the interesting thing about this kind of vehicle, because it's exactly what I saw at the RTC in 88 and 89 when we did that cleanup, is you're literally bringing assets into a holding pen where the documentation can be destroyed or lost. And because it's government, that process of losing the documents is protected from charges of obstruction of justice.
Catherine, speculate for just a moment. Who came up with this idea? How was this developed? Was this Paulson and Bernanke? Did they go out to dinner one night and say, let's come up with this thing? How do you think this thing was created?
The idea of separating out the assets, and this kind of idea is not unusual in the financial world. But in this situation, it was floated in a Wall Street Journal article by a threesome, including Nick Brady, the former Secretary of Treasury, during the last cleanup. So it was Brady, Ludwig, and I think Paul Volcker had an article in the Wall Street Journal. Now, normally, George, when that happens, players get together behind the scenes and then decide they'll float a trial balloon. And so that was a trial balloon, and then it very quickly got picked up on as a proposal circulating around Washington and Wall Street, and then Paulson came out with his proposal.
Bill,
what's interesting here, from my standpoint, almost when I first started realizing the gold market was rigged back after long-term capital management blew up, all roads leads to Goldman Sachs. Everywhere we've turned in our world, it goes to Goldman Sachs. And you asked her, well, how did this hatch? And I think Catherine's got it right. In addition to implement their plan, Paulson brought in a couple of guys from Goldman Sachs, and they're everywhere around the Treasury, around the Treasury and the Federal Reserve, and so on. And it's they, I think, were working on this for some time, which is why Paulson brought them in, because they knew what was coming.
They knew what was
George,
coming.
I don't
See,
know
that's
if you
dangerous.
Had a chance to listen to it, but on Sunday. On Sunday, Treasury did a conference call with analysts from Wall Street.
Yes.
They put out a broadcast and proceeded to give a briefing to everybody about what was coming down in terms of how they were going to do the deals, et cetera. You can link to this. I put a link to the blog that posted it up on my blog. If you go to solari.com, just click over to the blog. The Treasury conference call is there. And what you hear them describing is basically saying, look, you know, all this stuff that you're reading about in the press, and we're saying to Congress, we don't really have to do that. We're really going to do it this way. And so you get a sense of literally a Treasury that's being run by Wall Street for Wall Street. It's quite amazing.
That's quite pathetic, isn't it?
Well, I haven't gone through it with a lawyer, but my question is it treasonous?
Well, now, but who's going to push it? Who's going to prosecute? Nobody.
Well, you know, we're open. We're willing. I will tell you, George, I was shocked that the House did not pass the bailout package.
Is this grand theft, Catherine?
It's coup d'etat. It's more than theft. It's a reengineering of governance institutions. And one of the things... This is continually is being described as a crisis and a market phenomena, and my real question is how much of this is simply continuing the engineering of the centralization. For example, a lot of good writing has been done on what happened to Bear Stearns. It was an economic hit, and if you look at how the naked short selling and the short selling is working, we're watching economic hits that are being allowed by the regulators.
Catherine, we're going to take phone calls with you and Bill Murphy when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Andy Goss, respected monetary historian, joins Catherine Austin Fitz as we continue to talk about the bailout. When we come right back, we'll take your phone calls with Catherine and Bill Murphy right here on Coast to Coast AM. Bill, let's get your prediction first. Do you think the House will approve this when they finally vote?
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like they've twisted enough arms by now that they're not even going to put it up to vote unless they have it. And I'm sure if, I mean, not to be too crass, but if they, you know, bribe people any way possible to get, what, 12 or 13 votes, they're going to get it done somehow.
You agree, Catherine?
Yeah, I think given the tools they have to use to bring force to bear, it's going to be very hard, although there's tremendous constituent opposition, so I don't think it's a done deal yet.
When, Catherine, do we end up paying the piper for this travesty? Because we're going to eventually.
We're paying it right now. One of the things that's been happening is as these various shocks come and the various bailouts come, what you're seeing is more and more of the players in mainstream financial markets begin to understand what Bill Murphy and his GATA colleagues or I have been saying for years. And as that happens, you have more money that's looking to run and hide. So, for example, we've seen the yield on Swiss bonds drop to almost nothing just over the last 2 weeks. So you have literally trillions of dollars waking up to the notion that the system is fundamentally not sound. And if you think some fraudulent mortgage securities and bum derivatives can price down an economy, George, the thing that really prices an economy down is a belief that the rule of law is not available. And that's when you start to get these big shifts, and that's what we're watching now, which is it's happening now, and there's nothing in this bailout that can even stop it. The most you've got is some resources to hold things together until the election, but after the election, watch out.
You know, it's interesting what you don't hear too much about. What if it does get passed and it's not enough?
It's not enough.
And I don't think it will be enough.
That's right. And then the markets start to go from there, and they're using up all their bullets on this one, and it may or may pass. They said I think it will, but I mean, what are they going to come back with? And that's the scary part. If anything could happen out there. There are reports out, and there's still rumors at this point, but they sent stuff to Bank America preparing for a bank holiday should something break down. And that's not to be overly scary, but I think it's just the fact they're just matter-of-factly doing it. They don't expect it, of course, but they're even alerting people to that extent.
See, Bill's a nicer guy than I am. I don't think they're trying to hold it together. I think they're trying to hold it together to the election, but I think they're setting up a mechanism so that once it falls apart, their criminal liability has been extinguished and the trail of where the money went has also been extinguished.
Could be.
Well, you know, your listeners should know, and I guess they do. You know, Catherine's had a lot of experience with it. This is not just hyperbole. I mean, she's been there.
Let's go to the phones. Lois in Los Angeles, first-time caller. Thanks for calling, Lois.
Hello. I'd like to talk to Catherine.
She's
Hi, Lois.
Hello. I have a plan that would not use our taxpayers' money to pay the banks, but to pay off the defaulted loans that were defaulted, say, September 15th or some convenient date. Not just pay the defaulted part, but to pay them off in full. The banks would get their money, the middle class would be saved, and very importantly, the bundles of mortgages would not be sold to foreign investors.
Where are we going to get the money, Lois?
Use the money that is planned, the tax money that is planned to be used to pay off the banks.
You know, Lois, what you're suggesting is somewhat like, conceptually, it's very similar to what the House Republicans were proposing, which was, you know, deal with the problem, put the money at the root, on the ground, and let that trickle up, so to speak. Now, one thing you should know, the money that's being planned to be spent here is not tax dollars. They're going to borrow more money. Now, obviously, taxpayers are liable for that. But they're planning on borrowing the money, and it's going to be more than $700 billion because it's they buy and sell, use that money. And so ultimately, it's going to be more than 700. But what I would encourage you to do, there's a place on my blog called the Invention Room, where I encourage people to put up their plans for dealing with the situation. And I'd love it if you had time, if you could post it.
There will still be bank failures, Catherine.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the reason there's going to be bank failures, George, is you have a system which has issued far more debt than there is capacity to service that debt. And so we need consolidation. There has to be consolidation that's healthy. You can't have hundreds of thousands of people working away at something that doesn't produce anything productive and is not needed.
Let's go to Bill in Seattle. You're on with us west of the Rockies.
Yes, I've been thinking totally. I've been accused of being an incurable idealist, but for the last few days I think that we ought to reach into the owners of the Federal Reserve and let them reach into their pockets and pay for the whole thing, for all the fortunes they've been scheming for the last 100 years. But that nobody would even consider such a thing.
No, no, no. I'll consider that.
Would
I think
you?
Bill would, too.
Well, and then this morning I heard Rush comment that all the same behaviors that went on at Enron, cooking the books up to quarterly numbers to look good to get their bonuses, the same things went on at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Well, Bill, this is again where God comes from. We've been warning people about this stuff for years, and because of the money and the power, I mean, we're not allowed to be heard. I mean, it's getting to where the problem is. I was on CNBC, and we just got started, early February 1999. As soon as they heard what I had to say, been blackballed pretty much ever since in the United States from our message getting out there. And we, it's the Enron, with the people that tried to disclose what Enron, what the real story there, they were laughed at, scoffed. That was, I think, Fortune's firm of the year for 5 years in a row. It was a total fraud. And it's similar to what's happened here. People that have tried to blow the whistle and explain to the American public what this finance group is doing, and the bankers in New York and so on, are shunned.
Well, let's go ahead, Catherine. I hear you breathing.
You can hear me. I just want to add, because I've been a member of Bill's website, Le Metropole Cafe in Gatta, for many years now, and Bill is very humble. He has managed to pull together really amazing people, just leaders all over the world, and excellent people in finance and financial networks globally, through GATA and through Le Metropole Cafe, and in the process, and he has a way of inspiring people that is amazing, but he has managed to gather documentation which is breathtaking. I mean, it's literally millions of dollars of quality of research, and this documentation is airtight, and it has been vetted through the internet by hundreds of the best and the brightest, and the fact that with all this documentation behind him, he cannot get on to any of the major media is, I've never seen better proof in the financial area that corporate media is just simply not telling people what the basic facts of reality and what they need to know.
Now, Bill, what will happen then if this is approved? They'll get the $700 billion. How will they get the money? Will they sell treasuries, bonds there, backed up by the good faith of the United States? And then who would buy them?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to hand off to my colleague, Catherine, on that one. She's much more appropriate to answer that question.
Well, that's going to be the $64 question, because now that, you know, as the news has gone out to Americans that the markets are not fundamentally sound, the news has gone out around the world that that the U.S. dollar and the U.S. credit is in serious trouble, and we've seen articles in leading financial press around the world, you know, could the United States default on its debt?
Yeah, who's going to want to buy this?
Well, there are two reasons people are going to want to buy it. First of all, if you look at our global trading systems, all of our trading partners have a vested interest in us being able to buy from them or transact with them. And so if the dollar should shift out of parity with a lot of different currencies, it's going to cause pain globally. So there's an interdependency is number one. But the second thing is, George, and I've said this before on Coast to Coast, we have the weapons. And just as we can force a congressman to vote for something that his constituents oppose 200-1, we have the ability to be very persuasive to leaders around the world that they need to buy our dollars.
Isn't that extortion?
Absolutely. But, you know, if you go back through history, the central banking warfare model has been the dominant model.
Yes.
You know, in the first world, and, you know, the central banks print money, and the military make sure that people take it. It's a global taxation system through the balance sheets.
Let's go to the Big Apple in New York. Maria, go ahead, Maria.
Oh, hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you for some wonderful comments. Catherine, I do agree that with you that this is just another one of their massive looting schemes. I wanted to get your opinion about something that I was just told by a friend of mine has owned some pretty big companies. So he's got some big private investment accounts. One is with J.P. Morgan. A couple of weeks ago, he was contacted by them, and they told him that they wanted him to divest all of his stock, or a lot of his stock. I don't know all the details, but they said that they wanted him to divest his stock portfolio. He explained to them, he wasn't interested, and, he's in it for the long haul. And about a week ago, he was contacted again. And they basically told him that they did not want his business anymore because they did not agree with, that their investment policy did not agree with his strategy. And I thought that was, he thought it was really unusual. He's pretty floored by it. And I wanted to hear what you thought about that.
Well, that is a fascinating piece of information because I was watching the market just moment to moment all day Monday as it dropped 700 points. And one of my questions is the plunge protection team trying to drive it down and basically remind Congress if you don't pass this, if you don't give us $700 billion, we're going to drive the market down?
One thing for your listeners, George, Catherine talked about the plunge protection team. It's very well known. It's active. It's the working group in financial markets for the president, Treasury Secretary, Fed, head of the Fed, head of the SEC. And there's different ways that they can do this stuff. And there's the one organization people aren't aware of is the Counterparty Risk Management Group. And again, it's Goldman, top guys of it are Goldman Sachs again, but it's some major hedge funds like Paul Tudor Jones and some other major firms on Wall Street. And their mandate is so-called to keep stability in the markets. Well, this is what's helped cause this mess again because of this trying to create stability. They've now left us with a very unstable situation.
Bob in Vancouver. Go ahead, Bob. Take it away.
I have two questions for your guests.
Sure.
That revolves all around, seems to revolve so much around the Federal Reserve. And I was wondering if the guests think that this is something more, deliberately engineered, and whether it's the root cause is the Federal Reserve. And the second part is what should be done with the Fed? Should it be abolished, or should it be nationalized, or what do they think? And I'll take my answers off the air. Thanks.
All right. Who wants that?
Bill?
Well, I know Ron Paul wants to abolish the Fed. They're very interlinked, this whole thing. And I think it's just something in my mind that's just gotten out of hand. And what people aren't aware of, and they wouldn't be, and most of even a lot of Wall Street isn't. There can be what they call it derivatives. There's hundreds of trillions that are financial contracts made with other counterparties and so on that are threatening to blow up. And Gotta touched on it right after we started. We gave a gold banking derivative crisis document to the Speaker of the House, and we thought it could happen in gold, but instead they calmed the gold market from getting too exciting, and now they're petrified. And like a neutron bomb can go off with these with the derivatives, and it can create enormous instant losses. Think of it like a nuclear bomb going off in the financial markets.
Right.
And that's one thing, and nobody knows what could happen, but it's there, and these things have grown exponentially, especially at J.P. Morgan. And so back to your caller's question, it's all intertwined now. This is why Morgan and then the Bear – Fed, that situation taking Bear over and so on, it's all very closely intertwined, and they're working very closely together to try to manage this thing.
Let's go to Deborah in Milwaukee. You're up with us. Go ahead, Deborah.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have first a comment and then a question. In the 1980s, Chile, of all places, had a somewhat similar situation, and they had the market take care of itself. Loans couldn't be made within the market. Things were sold or portions of it. And I'm greatly concerned about putting one individual who doesn't really have to answer to anyone afterwards what occurs when Warren Buffett recently bought into Goldman Sachs, now General Electric. General Electric was cash. When Wachovia went down, even Mitsubishi became part of it. My concern is when one person is not really answerable as to what's going to happen, given that kind of authority and power, could the same individuals, end up with a buffer of the burden put on the taxpayer, end up cherry-picking the best afterwards? That's my question.
Yes, the answer is absolutely.
That's what I thought.
Unless you follow certain processes, the danger of cherry-picking and all sorts of unfairness in a way that loses money for the taxpayers and the government is a very serious consideration. One thing I wanted to mention, there's an excellent book about some of the countries that this has happened to in Latin America called The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein, and I strongly recommend it to anybody who wants to get a perspective on the ways that this kind of debt bubble and collapse has happened in different countries around the world and some of the things that happened, because it'll give you a sense of what could happen here and what to watch out for.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me is how ironic is it that the people in South America are have a big smile on their face in Argentina and Chile, looking at us, saying they're calling down there that we've become Argentinized or whatever. In other words, we were laughing at them, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, and now we're worse.
So true. Let's go to a final caller. Lisa in California. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you for taking my call. This is Helen Y. about gold. Helen, where do you buy it? How and where do you keep it? And how and where do you cash it in later?
That's a good question. You know, that's by the way, it's a big problem. It's actually buying gold these days isn't as easy as it sounds. A lot of the coins that you can buy aren't there. The American government restricting sales in American Eagles, American Buffaloes, coin shops are out. There's a total disconnect between the physical market and the futures market, which is used by this gold cartel to keep the price from exploding. So actually finding gold and silver at this point is becoming fairly tricky, but there are some wonderful dealers that you can go. You can go to Magada.org and check. There's a lot of dealers that they've supported us, and we give them some visibility, and you can get your gold from them, and you can bring it to your local bank in a safe deposit box, or you can, you know, something like that. And then when the price goes up high enough at some point, I mean, you can bring it back to the same dealer, and they'll buy it from you.
Minus a commission, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I should also mention you can, through your brokerage account, you can buy a bullion trust that's literally holding a fund. It's just holding precious metals. You can also, there's several companies where you can buy digital gold and buy gold and silver and leave it in a depository, including in other countries. So there and all of these different ways can be adapted to a 401k or IRA. So there are numerous ways to buy precious metals.
Catherine will stay with us. We'll be joined by Andy Goss and Bill Murphy. Thank you so much for being on the program. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.